Greetings and welcome to Star Trek Discovery Pod, a sometimes funny, trying to be smart podcast covering all things new and classic Trek. Stormy weather a brewing. I am your captain, Mariah Gossett. With me on the view screen, we have
stuck in a pattern buffer, Paul.
Oh, that pattern buffer. And Clyde is on an away mission, taking some cadets across a very icy planet in peril. Hopefully, to return very soon.
Yeah, that's beautiful, Mariah. We did it. We did it, everyone.
As we have said before, we are currently rewatching Star Trek Discovery in preparation for its fifth and final season, which is coming in April 2024. This week, we're diving into the first half of season four with episodes 1-6. Just a couple of reminders to get us started if you're new to the pod, so that you have all the information at your hands. And welcome. Welcome if you're new to the pod.
We are going to be great today. We're going to be great.
We're going to be so great today. Yeah, you don't even know, guys. I have definitely not been in trauma-informed reporting mode all day. It's going to be a great time.
We're going to be Lieutenant Tilly great.
Lieutenant Tilly great. Paul, where could people find links to all the things that they should know about the podcast?
Hey, if you would like to subscribe to our podcast, do so at Apple, Spotify, and YouTube. All links are at StarTrekPod.co. And if you love or hate, or it's a spectrum, guys. It's a spectrum.
Strong feelings.
Our content, please consider joining our Patreon for just $2 an episode at patreon.com/StarTrekPod.
Indeed. And if you are watching us tonight live on YouTube, we would love to hear from you. What did you think about this first half of the season? What are your thoughts now that we're returning back to the world of the DMA and old twirly mustache Tarka? Oh, I'm ready to talk about Tarka. And if you are too, you can join us in the chat with capital P, capital O, capital D, capital pod. I might have even spelled that incorrectly. P-O-D, pod, in caps in the chat. We'll take note of that and bring it up on the screen and try to comment and explain any of our terrible thoughts and feelings or great thoughts and feelings. Okay, I think it might be time for us to give some...
Rara Rapid Riker.
It may be time for a rapid Riker. What did you think about the first half of this season so far?
I'm not gonna lie, season four is probably my least favorite. Not because I think this is actually Burnham's most consistent, acting as far as as a character.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I would say all the acting is pretty solid. I guess for me, there's the main plot of the DMA, which I think works great. Mm-hmm. But then there are all these side quests, mm-hmm. side traumas that everyone goes through.
We love a side trauma.
And I'm going I don't know if I'm losing focus on the thing that's really hooking me. Whereas in the other seasons, there were, I knew what I was focusing on. Right. So in here, I still, we're halfway through, and all we got about the DMA, which is supposed to be the big bad, is that, it's outside of the galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, it just seems like, and then we're adding some Zora trauma on top of it, and so, trauma on trauma on trauma, I'm going, I don't know what I'm focusing on. So I think that style of storytelling is a little, not Star Trek-y for me in a way that what I want. Does that make sense?
It's not. Yeah. It's like you're craving an ice cream sandwich and someone handed you granola and yogurt.
In a way, I made a cheesecake yesterday with camembert, and I replaced the Trader Joe's camembert with a French camembert, which is three times as more expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not as good as my wife said, it kind of smells like ham.
Yeah, I was gonna say the Frenchier you go with the cheese, the stinkier it's gonna be. So
so I have like 3/4 of a hammy cheesecake in my refrigerator, and I kind of feel about the first half of season.
I'm sorry, a hammy cheesecake just really settled in for me.
I see what it's doing, and I feel like it's getting its rhythm, but like it just isn't coming together for me.
Yeah, I to Kian's point, it's a bummer. It takes us so long to finally meet Tenzi. Hashtag spoiler alert for the latter half of the season. But yeah, I think to me, the first episode to me was so exciting in a lot of ways because I felt like we were going to get. I look back at some of my old notes from originally watching the season, and I was like, oh, we're going to get them bopping around planet to planet, delivering dilithium. And it's like, it kind of becomes that, I guess what we've kind of gotten with Strange New Worlds, right? It's like kind of the adventure of the week on a different planet. And then even with the addition of the gravitational distortion at the very beginning, the DMA that we now know it as now, I was like, oh, okay, this is going to be part of the driving force to go from like galaxy to planet, like, great, I'm down. It's like, we're trying to give everyone resources they need to survive this potentially like really intense thing. But I do remember being so emotionally, like, I feel so bad for Book this entire season.
Like, and here's the thing that I hate because it's not enough to be acting well. And it's not the actor's fault. Like, the actor's doing fine, you know? It's everything to do with, like, I don't know if I want to just hang out and watch someone, like, grieve for, like, you know, seven episodes.
And later, I think post six, we get kind of more, like, we get Book kind of a bit more on angry, which I appreciated the switch there. And, like, I enjoy the push-pull of, like, I'm not trying to be like my father. He was so angry. But I'm like, I think you have you deserve to be angry. Your entire freaking planet was destroyed. Like, I would be...
Well, when my home world got destroyed, I wasn't as angry at all. Like, I just came, I settled, I found myself, you know, a lovely wife and baked a hammy cheesecake.
But yeah, I think it's I'm always looking for part of what I do love about Discovery is usually it is bringing me into a conversation about like the larger political sphere. And I know that this particular season, they were talking a lot about like something that truly affects everyone, right? Like this isn't just a problem for just the Federation. It is a problem that the entire galaxy has to kind of come together on. And so I do enjoy the more political episodes, but
finish.
Oh, I was like starting with Kobayashi Maru, which is directed by Olatunde Onsunsame, written by Michelle Paradise, Jenny Lamette, and Alex Kurtzman. I wanted to get your pulse on, you know, this becomes a bit more of some political thriller this season, or at least I don't know if thriller is the right word, political drama.
There you go. It's a lot, House of Cards in the Federation.
Sure. What did you think of?
It's President? No Klingon Game of Thrones, by the way.
It's literally. No Klingon Game of Thrones, which,
like, you know, like hashtag like Paul Mariah for life, you know.
Yes, Klingon Game of Thrones will happen at some point. What did you think off the bat of President Rylik and like her sort of asserting herself in those first two episodes?
Like, I like the idea of Rylik and I like the execution of Rylik throughout the episode, except for the first episode. Like, you know, because it just gets really weird when you're on a ship and you're in the middle of emergency and then you stop the captain.
You're just playing weird mind games.
Yeah. I mean, that's just really weird.
Think maybe you talk about that with Burnham afterwards, like, hey, why did you decide you had to go?
It's just one of those things where like I'm not buying that in a way. Like, I don't think that's how the universe works. Like, you know, here are people in danger and the person in charge. Like, I think committee works great when there isn't like, you know,
a ticking time bomb.
Yeah, like, right? You know, like if sometimes someone has to make a decision in times of stress. And I think with a space station hurling out of control and, you know, like, and, you know, about to blow up into, it just seems like not correct of what would happen.
Yeah, I was like, they seem to do that a fair amount this season because, like, in watching episode six today and prep for this, it's like, when Owo goes up to Saru as they're like trying to get pattern buffer and is like, let me tell you about the traumatic incident that led to my behavior.
I was like,
this couldn't happen after when everyone's okay.
Or like in private, like, you
or
know,
in
like
the, even in the moment when it first happened.
Yeah. Or in a podcast, like, you know, it could have been like, but like on the bridge, that's just silly.
Yeah. But anyway, but there's a lot of things I'm still like enjoying throughout. Mm-hmm. I'm really liking the kind of renewal of the Federation, getting to see some of the I enjoy the mental gymnastics. I enjoy the political drama that is being set up this season. And those I think are some of the more successful episodes to me.
I agree.
Yeah, even in, I guess, jumping to two, you know, like in Anomaly, which is, again, directed by Olatunde Onsunsame. This one was written by Anne Coffle Sanders and Glenys Mullins. You know, I enjoy, this episode, I was like, sorry, y'all, I'm reading through my notes. I love the pair up of Book and Stamets. And I enjoy when we get to see characters we don't normally put together. The only thing that would have made it better was if you slapped Reno in there.
I think that was great. I think that worked great. I think, you know, like they find clever ways to explain why Book's ship can, you know, transform. Mm-hmm. Here's an advantage. It can go through like an accretion disk. Well,
yeah, they've explained that before. I think in a previous season, like the reason his ship can transform is because like the way the warp channels have been since the burn. I remember had a lot of debris or whatever.
Yeah, you know, I see it, like, you know, and you just keep on trying to find more ways to justify it.
Yeah.
I'm cool with it.
Yeah. And then the other, like the subplot to me that I did find really beautiful in these first few episodes is about Gray finally getting to be in their body and sort of like the metaphor that they're using there. And I think given the political atmosphere, both of when this season came out and even more currently, like having trans representation, and I think the use of the Trill, but also with actual trans actors and characters, is such like a great way to like double triple down on like, these are important stories that need to be told. And here's like a way to do it in an interesting sci-fi way. I've enjoyed Gray's journey.
Yeah, no, I mean, I suppose, but like it goes, why are you giving him like 900-year-old technology?
With the from Jean-Luc Picard, because wasn't it like outlawed in a weird way or something like that?
But it just seems like, you know, it seems like sort of, I don't want to say ridiculous, but like it just seems like, well, fan service to call it out, but like
definitely some fan service there, but I can see some justification of like it wasn't really working very well and then like it just wasn't necessary, you know.
Oh, sure. I get it. But like, you know, at what point do you go, hey, Mariah, you're sick. You have something that's going to change your entire life. Here's this 900-year-old technology that we found in the archives.
Hey, if it works. I mean, penicillin's freaking old, guys. Like,
it's not 900 years old.
It's not 900 years old because modern medicine is not 900 years old.
I suppose people still use leeches in some places. So I don't know.
I mean, there's been a big resurgence in quote unquote all natural medicine, which is a whole different podcast to talk about.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is like an interesting nod, but I will give it to the idea of the burn distortion of communication.
I see the fan service is totally fine. Mm-hmm. You know,
we've gotten way more in other shows, so
it was just a really weird thing as far as
even not to just say like, oh, it's updated from something that was started this time, or
like
the origins of this started here and this is what we have now.
There's no reason why this isn't a common practice, you know. It need not be, you know. I don't know, it was just really weird to me.
Yeah, I could see that. Okay, jumping into three with Choose to Live, which is directed by Christopher J. Byrne, written by Terry Hughes Burton. This was one I remember kind of not liking originally as much, but I enjoyed on the rewatch a lot more. Mm. What did you think about the Romulan Navarre political back and forth?
This Choose to Live is the one where what's her name? Murder Nun, right?
Oh, yeah, Murder Nun. Kwat Malat. We have Gabrielle.
Yeah, and so I know this is gonna be a hot take, and I apologize, but I'm not a big fan of the Romulan murder nuns. You know, like, I know. I said it was hot. It was a take.
That is spicy.
You know, and I don't know why. I'm a person who tries to be, you know, fairly candorous. Is that a word? They just seem really, like, just unfortunate to be around for narrative reasons. Does that make sense? Like, you know, like, you're like, oh, there's going to be no subtlety about my behavior. I'm just going to, here's what.
But what
do you find interesting about them?
It's like, even with how brutally honest they are, it still feels like a weird riddle. And I don't know, like,
I mean, it's weird, you know. Yeah, I'm pro woman. I'm pro Romulan, and I'm pro murder. Maybe I'm not so pro with the nun aspect, but like, you know, three out of the four, I'm really pro these things.
Very interesting. You say pro murder over pro nun. Oh man. But yeah, I think it was like obviously such a big like stick in the mud kind of character, but I think I enjoyed seeing Burnham have to work her way mm-hmm. around it and find a way to like essentially get what she wants, but not in the way that she thinks she's going to get it. And I enjoyed that it was more of a game of mental and like political game than what we had seen in like, you know, it wasn't like who can do the math the quickest and give us some like, you know, I love all the scientific explanations, especially when they are rooted in like real actual science. But to me, it was like an interesting, like, I don't know, dip over to a different direction to see mm-hmm. like how she had to work her like intellect in that way.
Like, I suppose like what I'm having a little issue with this first half of the season is I feel like there's setting up for Burnham moments or Burnham soliloquies at the end of each episode. Does that make sense? And I don't feel like I'm loving that.
You think it's like a bit of a nod, I feel like, to Star Trek of the past? Because to me, that feels the most like 90s Trek.
And I do agree with that. But like, I feel like it's landing on exposition from Burnham as opposed to like here we saw, it feels like less of a we situation in a her thing. Mm. Does that make sense? And I think
I can see that.
And don't misunderstand me. I don't have a problem with her getting her moment, but mm-hmm. like for six episodes, it seems like that's not my favorite.
Yeah. Well, do you think that's ultimately because like, you know, and I've seen like, there's been some comments, you know, as we've been reviewing and like how we've often discussed, like we don't really have like a huge backstory on all of our bridge crew, but like, mm-hmm. as other people have pointed out, the core cast of this show is not the bridge crew. It is Burnham. It is Stamets. It is Saru, it is Tilly. We're kind of our mm-hmm. core four, and then we've kind of sure. added in Book and probably Culber, I'd say, as our other sure. main plot point character drivers, mm-hmm. right? And so it is interesting that it isn't like all those people do work together, but it's kind of like they're not the ones we're seeing on the bridge every single time we're mm-hmm. in like these big moments. We're having to cut back to engineering. We're having to cut to medical bay mm-hmm. or like people are having to come and go. And I wonder if because it isn't this like core four, you know, that we've seen on most other shows that are always sitting in the big chairs mm-hmm. at the front of the ship, if that creates like some disconnect within maybe. How we're maybe. Approaching.
Like, like it literally could be because I don't respond to sci-fi. No, I mean, like, it could be a lot of things. I don't know what it is. What it seems to me is, like, I actually know Burnham's story. Mm-hmm. I actually know Saru's story. I know Tilly, and I know Culber, like, you know, and I suppose, you know what it might be? And I don't want to be this way about it, because it sounds like, it sounds weird, but, like, her solution is almost some form of empathy. Just in the same way that Kirk's solution is always some form of, like, do this, you know? And watching, I don't think if I were to watch original Star Trek, you know, right now for the first time, I go like, oh, he's really just really dogmatic. You know, he's very patriarchal in a way that, like, is not, it probably sit the wrong way, because there's, I don't feel like there's kind of a balance in perspective. You know, like, there's this, you know, very few people say to Book, okay, you gotta just suck it up and do it. You know, everyone says to Book, like, you know, I understand how bad it is. Like, you know, it really sucks to lose your planet. As a person who, I get it. But,
like, yeah, is it then, like, too grounded in realism? And it's not, like, fictitious enough?
This is the interesting thing. Like, you know, I think this is the one thing that Discovery, it plays against that, like, all the other ones don't. Like, you know, it plays more with psychological realism. And I think it's a harder road to toe. And, you know, I'm not judging it for not always hitting. But, like, I can't just say, like, because you tried something harder means that, like, you know, like, means I give you a buy all the time. It just feels like in this case here, we're really playing with a lot of, like, character work, and all the character work isn't really that new, considering that we've been with these people for three seasons and they have the same kind of
I think it's probably, like, to me, I wonder if it's because it feels like a lot of repeat damages. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's always like such a huge, it's never like we're going to slowly adjust your character because things are changing. It's like someone died and now your world is crushed, or the world has ended and now your world is crushed, or you have to leave everything you've ever known. You know what I mean? It's never like, it would be like fun to see a truly small stakes episode. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, 100%. Like a Lower Decks episode where that.
And I wonder if there was more of that balance of, like, yes, there's this impending thing, but where are those, like, kind of, and I think that's probably why, I mean, it is still huge, but I think it's probably why I enjoy, like, the Adira and Gray storyline, especially, like, I really liked watching Gray work with Zora in this, like, seemingly simple way to, like, solve this problem, even with the giant ticking time bomb of, like, the ship is going to self just, you know, like, be eaten by space, essentially. But it was like, oh, I wish there were more of those moments of, like, the episode starts and it's like Zora's being wonky, so we're stuck in space, like, space dock, and then it is like Gray who's like, well, let's just play this game and, like, figure this out, while there is, like, I don't know, like a Hugh and Culber, like, relational argument going on, and then, like, Michael, like, and Burnham are processing. Like, I don't know, it would just be nice to, like, pump the brakes a bit.
Yeah, I mean, like, this season is about, like, catastrophe and trauma. And the trauma from it, right? Again, there's always trauma on Discovery. There's always
trauma in Star Trek, yeah.
And so, in this way, like, everyone is dealing with this situation. Culber is falling apart again. he's like, you know, he's having to keep everyone together, and now he's falling apart. You know, like, the only person who's really steady, the two people who are really steady, are Saru and Burnham, and Burnham is not really that steady because she's worried about her man, because he's so fine apparently.
Apparently, you have to add a qualifier. Hello.
So she's spending a lot of time, like, you know, like emotionally trying to be there for him, which she should as, you know, a partner. I get it. Mm-hmm. But she also has to run a ship and she's doing that right too.
It felt like she was trying to be like, Stamets, be helpful emotionally and in this way of providing like a distraction, you know. And I think it is interesting though, and like it kind of goes past where we've watched, but like once we do introduce Tarka, you know, I think who is like a more radical, his tactics are more radical than I think we have typically seen. You know, he's kind of playing that opposite counterpart to the Federation in that way. And like, for his own reasons that will be revealed as we continue to rewatch, but it's an interesting commentary to make of like, oh, when people are at their lowest is also when they're the most vulnerable to these kinds of people who can manipulate them.
Mm-hmm.
That's
the maximum of my life.
That's how Scientology gets you.
I learned that from my murder nun friends.
Your murder nun friends are ready to go. Oh, Kim brings up a good point. Saru's steady as long as he's not dealing with Tarina.
I'm going to say it. That's my favorite part of the season.
They are great.
I'm like watching this Vulcan, like, you know, Kelpian love story.
It's the thing that can only happen on Star Trek.
and it's really like, oh, here's some tea. Oh, well, mm-hmm. thank you. Oh, Kelpian tea. I really appreciate that. Like, it's like Downton Abbey or something.
Very Downton Abbey. Like, oh, I saw your ankle the other day. Like,
I really appreciate it because, you know, because like in like Next Generation or even Voyager. Voyager was like in the middle of the Delta
Voyager quadrant. Is horny.
Stop. Keep it in your pants. Keep it in your pants. Like, you know, people.
It was a horny show. Yeah. I'm just saying.
Like, you know, you had people like doing normal stuff. Like, oh, hey, let's play Cottiscotch. Or, hey, you know, like, here's this Holo novel, blah, blah, blah. None of that in the season Discovery. That's nothing. People don't even eat together, really. And if they eat together, it's because like, oh, by the way, I recognize that you have trauma. Like, you know, let's talk about the trauma, you know. And so it doesn't feel lived in a way as much as it feels. So anyway, that's just me bitching again. I'm always bitching. I'm sorry.
No, I mean, I think it's like, you know, when you love something, you give it feedback, you know.
There we go.
Yeah. And I agree, because I think there are those moments in like, you know, in Strange New World and a lot of the other shows, like in Lower Decks, you know, as well. It's like there's the bar at the end of the episode, right? Like there's the like the meetup, like we've made it, there's camaraderie, we have like a moment to like take a breath together. But I think that is unfortunately like a bit of that difference of true serialized storytelling versus episodic. And like this show went real hard into serialized. And I'm wondering too, because I'm watching this one in more like in the rewatch, it's been more of like a binge mode. Like I've been having to watch like one a day or two a day, essentially. Like, I'm wondering if I enjoy the show more week to week as it went on.
Interesting. Just so you can like not have like the.
It's like the digestion of like everything that's happened, because when it is all kind of shoved together, it does feel very like, whoa, there's like so much. Mm-hmm. going on. I haven't really had time to like process everything, and so
metabolize the trauma.
Yeah, I have to metabolize the trauma and like everything that's going on. But
it's
interesting.
It's fine, you know. I get it. Like, you know, I think the lightest episode or where I go like, oh, this is fun, this, I'm enjoying this. It's like the next episode, right? Is that where they do the Navarre can't join because we need some compromise, and Chili like goes for a run.
Yeah, yeah. So we have All Is Possible, which is directed by John Ottoman, written by Alan McElroy and Eric J. Robbins. But yes, it's Navarre's fast-tracking negotiations. Rilik has like demands of Burnham and Saru to kind of help push things along, because she's just like, hey, like, y'all are sort of into Vulcan and Romulan people. Can you help us here? And then we have Tilly, who's like, I don't know if I belong here. And so she takes the cadets onto the planet, the frozen like,
do
planet.
Do we know why all of a sudden? Well, I guess we do, but like, you know, as far as that, like, why didn't it really just say, yo, I think Navarre is going to back out. Let's figure out how to keep him in.
Yeah, it is interesting. This is where I like, Relic is such a weird character to me in some instances, because like, I see what she's trying, how they're trying to portray her. And then there's episodes like this where I'm just like, you seem to be someone who's fairly direct from what we've seen in other episodes. Like, you're not afraid of confrontation in the moment for confrontation. And yet now you're like, hey, I need you to go like do some backdoor dealings, you know? Like,
so here's my hot take again. Okay. Like a lot of hot takes today.
Two. You got some hot takes.
Too hot. Like, you know, I think she's modeled after Hillary Clinton.
I can see that.
And I think, like, you know, I really like it because she does her freaking job, you know, like, and so like, but like for some reason, some people, maybe even on this podcast, might find that a little unlikable. I don't know. I support women. Can you say the same, Ryan?
I mean, I don't blanket support every woman.
Fair.
There's some heavy misses. And I mean that in they miss the mark.
Anyway. That's right.
So, yeah.
But like you can see it, right? Like, she,
oh, yeah, I 100% can see it. Yeah.
Yeah. She's a political animal. She's doing what she needs to do. And I really appreciate that. Like, I go, like, you know, if a man were to do that, I would go like, that's the way you're supposed to play the game.
You know, yeah, I think she's playing the game well. It's just interesting to me that she like is bringing in, I feel like, people she doesn't 100% trust yet into this circle. Like, I don't know if she just sees them as like pawns to get what she wants, or if like, do you know what I mean? Like, I feel like she still thinks of Burnham as a wild card.
Yeah. Well, that's how I felt about you, but I brought you into my circle, and you know, and it worked out okay. You know, and soon we'll push out Clyde because of his anti peanut hamper, you know, agenda, which is totally fine. You know, he could SG-1 away. It'd be fine.
Peanut hamper for life.
That's right. Like, you know,
the guiding principles of this show is peanut.
That's right.
Hamper for life.
If peanut hamper shows up in like, you know, season 5,
oh,
Discovery wins. It just wins.
Discovery, you know, wins.
That's right.
I need peanut hamper.
That's right. But like, the fact that Relic is part Cardassian makes it so, like, you know, slightly, it's so cool and like slightly racist, which which is pretty good too. Oh, well, you're a political animal because of your Cardassian blood. You know, it's just so terrible. And yet it works so well.
You know, they love it. It would only be better if she was part Klingon.
Like a little Romulan as well. Like, you know.
Yeah, why not? Let's just throw everyone we've considered villains of the series into this one president.
So I don't know. Like, I like her character. I really like her character.
Yeah. So Chippy brings up an interesting point. Is the reason that she chose her because Michael is a wild card? I mean, I think it was more like, hey, you grew up on Vulcan. I think you know how to talk to Vulcans probably a little bit better than I can. But
I think for all of it, I also think that Burnham solves problems. I think in the end, like, Burnham has proven herself as a capable person who does what it takes and find solutions that other people cannot find, which, you know, is very Burnham of her, because she is overly, you know, takes over accountability because she's pathologically, you know, broken that way. And, you know, and no matter how much therapy she gets, which is none,
you know, some long chats with you,
like, people tell her crap and then she goes, great. But that's it. But, you know, no continual care. But also, like, you know, I think you're right. Like, her Vulcan heritage is in play. I just don't understand why Relic just, hey, like, there's a problem here. Like, you know, figure it, find out what the problem is, as opposed to like, hey, you want to come to a party? That's not a request. and you know, that just seems like slightly weird.
We never got a Relic Georgiosian. That would have been fun.
That would be hot. That'd be hot. I think that'd been hot.
It would have been good. Some good tete-a-tete mentally. What did you think about Tilly as our kind of our first sort of backdoor pilot to the Academy series? With the caveat, we know nothing about the Academy series, but you know.
You know, I like bumbling Tilly. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I like more self-possessed Tilly yet. Like, you know, it's and I think she'll, you know, there's like Tilly and then there's Killy, right? And both of them so good. Like right now, like you ever hear the Britney Spears song not a girl, not yet a woman? That's right. Mm-hmm. You know, like I feel like she's in between. All I need is time and the moment that is mine.
Don't think too much. We'll get flagged.
We'll
get flagged for copyright. Don't do it. I mean, what y'all don't know is that Paul is a pop music aficionado and it blows my mind every time.
You know, I like to feel happy when I listen to music.
Yeah, I get it. Not everyone's a weirdo like me who's like, ooh, have you heard the new Kamasi Washington jazz album with the interpretive dance music video? Love it. I get what you're saying. I enjoy that we are at a point where Tilly, to me, I think does need to like grow in that direction. Mm-hmm. And so I'm enjoying seeing the like shift over there. And I think mm-hmm. the Academy thing is an interesting way to do that.
Do we know if the Academy is taking place 900 years in the future?
They have not given us any details whatsoever.
Because I think that's too far. Like, I don't think that would be it. I mean, it'd be really weird. Like, you know, because most of the, like, that's,
yeah,
900 years is a long time.
It would be a long time. And I think like if you're to write like a thriving Academy series, it's probably set in our 24th century again, yeah, would be my guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Especially because they did, we know Tawny Newsome is a part of the writing team. And so it's like, if she's already sort of living in that 24th century world of Trek, potentially.
No one really wants, like, it's a hard thing to watch Mad Max day in, day out. You know, mm-hmm. and post-burn, you know, Federation is Mad Max. And like, yes, you're building stuff up again, but like, it's a hard watch.
Yeah. So we'll see. Although Chippy just said all the disco people have said, well, it's the same time period, so we could show up. But I have not seen anything confirming the time period.
Okay. Wow.
So.
Wow. That'd be interesting. Okay.
That would be interesting.
I'd still watch it, you know. But...
Yeah. It would be interesting. I think Sonequa and Doug have said, so this is what I have heard them say, is that there could be potentially some familiar faces this season on Disco. So I think there might be some reoccurring and familiar faces coming back.
Lorca. I want Lorca.
It could be Lorca. I'm still saying Ash Tyler, baby, coming back. Section 31.
Like, what, how could Ash live? But Lorca, mycelial network, he's just living in there. I can see it. We saw... It can happen. The real hero of Disco.
Yeah. Great. Chippy, I saw the interview you're talking about on the red carpet. They were talking about this season of Disco. It wasn't the Academy, from what I have seen. They were talking about this season and familiar faces popping up. So someone asked on the carpet if there's any fun cameos. Mm-hmm. But yeah, nothing for the Academy. Very tight-lipped as of yet. Okay, so episode 5, we have The Examples, which is directed by Lee Rose, who's one of my favorite TV directors, I think.
Oh, very good.
She does a great job. And then written by Kyle Jarrow. So we have the DMA popping around. We've got Tarka joining the ship. Okay, what were your first thoughts on Tarka?
I think Tarka's a loser.
Yeah.
I think he just gives off like major loser energy. Like, you know, like to me, like, you know, like I go like, oh God, you just suck. Like I don't want to have a synth ale with you. I don't want, you know, like you just
does not pass the beer test. Yeah.
it's just there's nothing about him that I find enjoyable. And the fact that Stamets likes him now, I go like, Paul, you know, you were already on thin ice with me, but you know.
It's easy when you find someone who seems to be, I think, a good counterpoint to what you think you're, it's like seeing someone you can see yourself in, but I don't think Paul is seeing all of the pieces quite yet.
Yeah. I mean, all Tarka has going for him is that he's really smart. That's all he has, really. You know, I challenge you to name another quality that he has.
Seemingly nothing yet, especially this early. But
and I don't. He's just rendered in a way that I'm like, oh, like I would. It would be better if it was Sheldon for me. I would accept it. You know, I'm serious. Like if it was, but this is so far off of what. Like my bandwidth is for what, you know, like mad scientist would be, you know?
Yeah. I think it's also it's hard for me to be ooh, another smart, you know, we have a lot of smart people on this ship that I feel like, you know, I'm like, as soon as he shows up, I know something is squirrely and something is off because I'm like, normally we don't need any extra brains on this operation. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
But then we go to, what did you think about the prisoner escape situation and the idea of the examples?
Okay, so like, you know, here once again, it is now hot take number 3.
Here we go.
Like, so I go like, I can see how a society can pick that, you know, like go like, oh. If we have
society picks that on a huge grand scale.
Well, yes. So you know, what you do is just to recap, the examples basically here's a prison and just randomly or you know, depending on, it doesn't matter severity of crime. You could be a murderer. You could be a jaywalker. You can all of a sudden have the worst sentence ever. Like, you know, go go to jail for 30 years or whatever, for jaywalking. And the idea of that would be so that no one commits crimes. Because small or big, because you know, you don't know what if you're gonna get the bad lotto ticket, if you will. And right. so in that way, if you're trying to create order, I can see how that would be. Whereas you know, in most everywhere else in the universe, there's a conversion rate, right? The amount of badness you have equals, you know, how much punishment you get. So then you just start well, I can be this bad, you know, that because punishment, like the other day, my friend, he got a ticket
Your
for
friend. Like,
my friend, you know, and Orion, you know. My friend got a ticket for not fully stopping at a stop sign, you know, and truth be told, I've been in the car with him many times and I've actually said, hey, you know, you didn't really stop there. He goes, and he, I'm going to tell you right now.
They call it a California roll, man.
Yeah. But I'm going to tell you now, if it were the case that he could go to jail for 30 years, he would have stopped, you know, so I'm not saying I prefer this. I'm just saying I can see how.
So you're saying you are hardcore into prison.
I would hopefully we can make prisons more profitable. That's
Oy.
For profit. Like in that great movie by Britney Spears, Crossroads. For profit prisons are the way to go. You know. Anyway, you know, so
interesting.
In that way, here, you know, our heroes, Burnham and Book, you know, decide to save these six people who are gonna wind up going dying because the DMA is
on the way, yeah.
I don't exactly know why. You know, Burnham is there again. She is the captain. She happened to be well suited for it, but once upon a time, it used to be Kirk and Spock and all the vital people on the ship, you know, would go down to away missions. Mm-hmm. And then 100 years passed. And then, you know, the Federation goes, let's not do that anymore. The first officer goes down because you're the captain of the ship. And there are a lot of people who depend on you. First officers are sacrificed.
I think to me, it's like, I wonder if it just is like, it took so long to get Burnham in the chair that Burnham was just always the default for going on these missions, you know? Yeah,
no, I get it. I see it. You know, I see it. Mm-hmm. I see why. And it's just not a good use of captainhood. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, if I'm like the director of like a movie and then all of a sudden like we need extension cords, I'm not going to go drive to like Home Depot and grab extension cords. It's not a good use.
Unless it's a short film, in which case you probably will. But no, I get what you're saying. But I think, you know, it does feel more. I mean, the other thing is this is like technically this crew was, you know, came up through the Kirk era.
Yeah.
Prior to Kirk era.
Yeah. Pre-Kirk. Yeah. You know,
pre-Kirk. And we see, you know, our captain on Strange New Worlds going on all these away missions as well.
No. I understand, but that's era appropriate.
It's era appropriate. I did really enjoy. I love the actor Michael Gray Eyes, who plays Felix, who's the one prisoner who decides to like stay because he's like, I killed someone and he wants to kind of give his life in this way. Although I am not someone who believes you have to give a life for a life, just personally. But.
No, well, that's not what I'm going to tell people, Mariah. Mariah is all about
capital punishment. Like,
eye for an eye, man. She's eye for an eye. Anyway, go on.
All the time. But anyway, I really enjoyed seeing Michael Gray Eyes, and I wish he was a character that got to stick around a lot longer because he's a great actor.
I think he's great.
Let's see. We give away the orb with the family tree.
Have you ever done
a family tree?
I have not. Like, my parents are immigrants, and I don't know if they really cared that much. I take it back. Like, you know, it was just not handed down to me.
Okay.
Like, you know, and it's probably one of the reasons why I feel so, I don't say unmoored as much as free, because I'm not bound by my ancestors, I suppose, I guess. Hmm. You know, I'm a true American that way. What I do matters. Everything that was not.
I mean, I like that perspective. The idea of being free versus, you know, being unrooted. I think that's a really nice metaphor, Paul.
I'm a genius. I'm a Tarka. That's why I don't like Tarka. Tarka the same.
That's an interesting point. The example is followed up on a race that Archer had made first contact with in Enterprise.
Oh, I did not know that. Like, you know, like my Enterprise knowledge is you know who had known that? Clyde, because he loves Enterprise.
He does. I think he came around on Enterprise. I need to give it a go. I've only popped in and out of that series a few times, but I have no hard feelings to Enterprise. Minus the theme song, but it grows on you. So
you have faith.
Yeah. You gotta have faith. Yeah, if you will. It's a long road.
Getting from here to there?
Yeah. Okay, our final episode in this particular series is number 6, Stormy Weather, directed by Jonathan Frakes, written by Anne Kofel Sanders and Brandon Schultz. This was it actually worked out well because this was also the episode that aired right before kind of the winter holiday breaks for television. Yep. So I'm glad we're kind of following along with that. We enter what can only be described as like a weird space split. It was like the design. I don't know if I was just like because I had just gone to see Driveaway Dolls and like the sapphicness had taken over, but I was like, this just looks like a vagina in the sky. And we're just
with diamonds. Vagina in the sky.
Yeah, with diamonds. We're really going on a singing tangent this week. But no, they enter the subspace rift. Yeah, that's what I'm going to start calling rift.
No. Ryan, not cool, man. I support women. This is not good.
All subspace rifts, okay?
That's right.
They realize they can't navigate out. That poor little dot robot screaming in space was so sad.
So sad.
So sad.
Just turn it off.
Just turn it off. And then Book tries to jump them out. He gets electrocuted and then starts having hallucinations and arguments with his dad. If you were electrocuted, who would be the last person you'd want to be hallucinating?
Last person who would want to be, who would I want to see the least?
Yeah. That you think would manifest in your head for some reason.
Last person. This is tough. Like, you know, would the person be dead or?
You don't have to be, I guess. I guess with the book is only seeing people who he presumes to have passed, and it somehow brings some comfort that these hallucinations are some sort of vision into a spiritual realm.
Like, I feel that I'm the type of person who people either like or just don't want to hang out with me. So I don't have a lot of people who I've had a pretty I didn't have the best relationship with my grandmother. But in that battle I won, so
you're good.
Yeah, so if I saw her, strangely enough, the answer that comes, and it's gonna be a weird answer, is Christopher Reeves.
Interesting answer.
Because I thought about it, I go like, here's this guy.
What's your beef with Christopher Reeves?
It's not. If I were to see Christopher Reeves and he's like immobilized in his wheelchair, like, you know, because like of the horse thing, it goes, I don't know if I have anything to say. And I think that awkward situation would be pretty awkward for me. Like, oh,
awkward situation.
Like, here you are, like, you know, you were the epitome of what most people at the time considered Superman. And now you can't move your pinky. Like, and I think I'm a pretty good conversationalist. So, how's life? Nope, can't use that. Because you're dead.
It's easier if you don't like them at all, because my answer was going to be Henry Kissinger, because then you could just like yell at him for being a terrible person.
I've come to realize that one of the things that I don't have that I envy in people is a strong anger response. Because anger gives you energy to do stuff, and that's
it's quite the driver.
Yeah. That's why I'm so lazy.
You're not a spiteful person, Paul.
I don't have the anger to not be lazy. I'm just so sedentary because I'm just so not angry at people.
You're ready to chill out.
I don't know. I would want a little more anger, But anyway,
I'll loan you some. You can have some. But anyway, back to track. We have Gray and Zora, which I think was one of my favorite kind of moments of this episode. I think because it did feel like a bit of that pause. But I wanted to get your thoughts on the evolution of Zora as we have seen it through these last season and a half.
I don't like it. I think I like it better in the next episode. In the next episode from episode 7,
once they have to have the dilemma of what to do about Zora.
They have the talk, but it's really weird to me when imagine your car starts talking to you, and then
they do that now.
Yeah, and
I rode in a Tesla for the first time the other day, and I hated it, but.
And then they're like, oh, I'm starting to have feelings now. I have a hard enough time, telling my wife to do things, literally you're on the ship and you're telling the ship to do everything. There isn't a time that you're hey, let's have a conversation, Zora, aside for Gray, and you're having feelings now too. I don't know.
I mean, it's a
little scary.
Is it any different from having to give commands to everyone else on the bridge, though?
In that way, they've chosen to be there, and that's their job. Zora did not choose to be there.
I guess that's true. That is an interesting dilemma.
And it's fine for now. I'm assuming Zora is a she, but like, you know, they're cool with it now, but like, what if they go, I don't want to anymore? What do you do then? Do you give up the ship?
I mean, supposedly in Calypso, which I think will be interesting to see if they ever tie it to Calypso by the end of next season. I know there's been some chat about it potentially being like, that's the ship in the mirror universe is something that's also been brought up since it seemed like society sort of dropped back into weird perils with like mining and, you know, disconnect in the universe. So it'll be interesting to see how they kind of play with that as we head to the end. But I enjoyed Stormy Weather. I thought it was like an interesting little puzzle episode. I think I enjoyed the Gray and Zora things the most. I did really like the sonar moment. I love when they use like old, when they're like, oh, we have to remember like old school tech. I don't know why. It just like, it makes me happy in a weird way. Like when they're like, oh, it's like they've had Morse code pop up before. Can we use Morse code? And like the idea of sonar this time, I just thought it was fun.
For me, what I had a hard time with is, okay, everyone go in the pattern buffer and I will guide us out. Like,
well, Captain does go down with the ship. That is the rule.
What did Burnham do? She just sat there getting cooked in her suit, and Zora flew everyone out.
I guess it's in case Zora goes down completely. I don't know, but
like, I don't know. There's a point where it goes, Zora, you're gonna take over. Okay, why
she you had to keep there? Zora company?
And if you just had a, you know. The regular
but I don't think a regular computer could do that.
I don't think that's the case. Like the computer of the Enterprise was pretty smart.
I know, but then you're leaving it up to like, even if she passes out and stays in the suit, it's like, yes, like Zora got everyone out of the pattern buffer, so they moved her to sick bay. I guess in my mind, it probably would have been better to see like, you know, like they made it and like, Burnham's the one that like beep boop beep boops everyone back in, you know, to like make it feel more purposeful. But
like this is, for me, I go like, this is where you're trying to give Burnham her moment again. And I go like, oh, like there's not a real moment here. It's not a genuine moment. You're constructing it in a way that's
it would have been interesting to see how if it would have, sorry,
yeah, go for it.
If like Burnham, you know, to fully put your trust in Zora. Like, would that have worked?
It would have been like, had they done that, had they set up the episode that way, that'd be fine. It could have literally been, they go like, hey, and we need one person here to have us go through. I'll do it. That would be fine. One line. But that's not what happened. So I'm going like, oh, you're.
It's also possible that line was there and then it got cut. I don't know.
But then someone cut it. Yeah. So like it's just one of those things where I'm like going like, oh, I'm not understanding a lot of these choices. And it's causing a disconnect for me, which is really strange in the sense that like a lot of it is high quality.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, so like it's like it's not,
yeah, it's like, sorry, you know, I keep cutting you off, Paul, so sorry.
No,
it's like, to your point that you made earlier, like the acting is all really great this season. It's like, everything looks really good. You know what I mean? Like all the sets and the costumes and the uniforms, like everything looks good. I don't think there's a problem with the performances. It is just like, it becomes like a puzzle with too many pieces at times.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean like it just doesn't feel like it's held together very tightly as opposed to forced together. But then again, like, you know, like I'm really excited about 5 because it seems like it's going to be, they're going to find that balance with this, like basically treasure hunt.
Yeah.
I'm excited to see a treasure hunt, you know, season. Like, you know, I just like, hey, you know, is it the end of the world? Maybe, but we won't know that. Like, you know, like we're just going to try find, we're going to try beat some bad guys, probably Orion's, because all of a sudden green is bad. I don't know.
Yeah, it'll be, I think I'll be excited for a little bit of a more grounded big bad versus like a nebulous thing going through space, you know, because and like while we do eventually get to like the core whales. Reasoning and the space whales behind it, but I think it is an easier sell to like have, I don't know, villains where you can try to plot what they're thinking and feeling.
Yeah, yeah, like, you know, because you want an adversary. You don't, like, it's, like, in a way, like, this season is about going up against the force of nature and going against other people, you know, like, of your own friends, you know, like, you know, like, it's like, there are four conflict, man versus nature, man versus something, man versus some,
him, man versus man.
Man versus
himself. Man versus self, yeah.
And so this is a lot of man versus self kind of thing, right? Mm-hmm. Because like we're all one team, and we're just screwing up against nature, you know. Mm-hmm. So I'd be some more man versus man and man versus society might be interesting to see.
Yeah, would be interesting. Any other thoughts on this first half of the season?
Any other thoughts? No. Less Tarka.
We got more Tarka coming, unfortunately.
I know.
Although I do like the episode where we get the backstory. It was, anyway, but we'll get there. just as a heads up, y'all, we are going to be skipping next week. It's a big festival week in Austin and things pop up. So it was just to kind of get ahead of ourselves and to give us a little bit of a break as we prep for the last half of season four. And then y'all, it's about to be season five time. It's coming up fast. I'm excited to see it. They are premiering it here at South by Southwest. I'm trying to see if I can get they're selling individual tickets, but they're like the last people loaded into the theater. So we'll see if I can get in. Also they're $30.
Did you tell them that you are a part of Star Trek Discovery Pod?
I did email Paramount and they originally responded and were like, oh, that's good to know. We're starting our list. But then I think the people we usually email with might've been let go because Paramount had some layoffs. So I have to figure out if they're still around.
Okay.
Yeah. So we'll see. But yeah, thanks y'all for tuning in. If you joined us live, thank you for listening. If you are one of our listeners, we so appreciate you. And hey, share the show with a friend. Do you have a friend who you want to get to like Star Trek? You should point them to our podcast. Maybe you could be like, hey, here's people who can chat you through and talk about what's happening in here and explain all the things. We've got a huge back catalog talking about all of Discovery. We've got plenty of rewatches here available. So, you know, see if you can talk a pal into joining you on the adventure through the last season of Discovery. You can subscribe, rate, and review on Apple and on Spotify. Please leave us a review on Apple. We really appreciate it. It helps other people find the show. Visit StarTrekPod.co for links to everywhere you can find us, as well as to our Patreon. Also, if you check the link down below, you can get merch. We've got stickers. We got t-shirts. We got peanut hamper themed merch, y'all. And we know you want it. Follow us
We should make a Tarka thumbs down.
A Tarka thumbs down. Boo, Tarka. I can see if we can make that. Yes, please buy some merch if you like it. There's some fun designs in our shop. You can find us on Twitter and on Instagram at Star Trek Pod. We will see you all on March 21st. Until then, live long and prosper. Bye-bye.
Bye, everyone.